Welcome to the PA Podcast Series 2. I'm Olivia Coftree, one of the two co-founders of Oriel Partners, a boutique PA and administrative recruitment consultancy based in central London. The business was launched in 2018 with the aim to provide the highest quality of service to both our clients and candidates, following three main values: honest, kind, and fun. Providing an honest and transparent service to our clients, to be kind and helpful to our candidates, and to have fun in the office in a supported working environment. Part of the reason for launching our business was to inspire others, and hence this PA podcast has been launched. This series, I will be interviewing a number of clients across a variety of sectors to provide current industry knowledge, understand what they look for when recruiting, and discuss the skills required to be successful in their roles. I'm absolutely thrilled to have Dr. Claire Huck with us today. Thank you so much for joining us. Claire started her career in academia, and after 10 years, she moved into a support role spanning engineering, finance, and now she is the chief of staff at a VC-backed climate tech scale-up. So, Claire, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be here. And just a side note for you, everyone listening, I feel like a bit of a rock star in this room. I'm surrounded by guitars, pianos, and the microphone's got its cool little thing over it. So yeah, I'm feeling very fancy. But yeah, it's really exciting to be here. I loved the first season of the podcast, listened to it, and I just thought it really showcased the variety of talent out there that, you know, people who do these roles, the variety of backgrounds that people have come from to move into these roles. And I, you know, I don't have a particularly quote unquote traditional background either. And so it really is exciting to be able to share that with our wider community, both for hopefully people who are listening, who are thinking about going into this career or progressing this career. Hopefully it's a bit of inspiration there. And then also for prospective clients, people looking to employ maybe their first support or promote someone into that role. I think there really is, you know, a lot of opportunity in those unusual CVs.
The wild cards.
The wild cards. Yeah, exactly. You know, it takes so many different skills to do this job well. And so, yeah, there's I think, many different types of people who can make a success out of this career.
So academia and now chief of staff, two very different things. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, as a side note, I was talking to a friend about this the other day. And to me, you know, they're not so different. There are a lot of transferable skills between what you do in academia and what you do in these support style roles. A lot of it is, you know, communication, project management, forward planning and things like that. And she sort of said, but, you know, I really see academics as that certain stereotype, you know, in a library surrounded by chaos.
They don't look like you, Claire.
Oh, well, thank you. But, you know, how she was sort of, you know, I think struggling to translate that creative chaos into that super organised, kind of very focused thing. And I sort of thought, OK, I can see where that's coming from. And maybe that is something that, you know, people maybe looking to hire would think when they looked at a CV like that too. And yeah, translating my CV from academia to business was definitely one of the challenges of making that career change. But just to go into sort of a brief detail about the two different paths, I started in academia. I did a doctorate in climate change, reconstructing historical climate change, and then moved into a couple of postdoctoral fellowships in the UK and the US. The next sort of stage in the academic career there is moving into the lectureship positions and the teaching. And I always knew that that wasn't necessarily sort of where my passion really was, I think, in the teaching side. I love the research. I love that curiosity. So it was a natural sort of breaking point for me, and I think I knew it was coming. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, dabbled a bit in administrative support in the sort of very early days before I went into full-time study in temping roles, which is always an amazing way to get a feel for what you're doing. And so, you know, I had an idea of the potential and knew I knew certainly, that I had a lot of skills that I could move over into that kind of, you know, organisational and support way. So I moved across, worked for myself, just sort of freelance for a while.
Is that when you did your temping?
I mainly just did sort of one-off contracts, bits and pieces here and there for people. But it did a similar thing in that it built that network and those connections, gave me exposure to different worlds. You know, I worked with musicians, accountants, healthcare professionals, all sorts of different types of support that was required. But that network ultimately led me to my first then sort of full-time role as a PA to a managing director of an engineering firm. And that was a fantastic sort of first full-time role because it was a mixture of business and private. He was very ambitious. There was a lot of property renovation going on outside of, you know, big contracts going out, tenders, working with the staff, kind of managing the office, all the sort of traditional things you might think of going into one of those roles. Following that, that was sort of a real step change at that point, and the point actually at which I started working with recruitment agencies as well. I'd sort of refined my CV a bit and moved into the finance sector. I was a senior EA there to the CEO of a hedge fund. That was much more of a private-focused role. High pace, high expectations, long hours, kind of, you know, I really got the hang of do it right, do it once, and trust your own judgment. And then the next role after that was moving into climate tech.
Which seems like the perfect collaboration of your EA PA experience and your studies.
I'm very lucky, yes. It wasn't a job that existed, obviously, when I first moved over, and I had to kind of accept that I was going to choose between maybe the two subjects, you know, of career that I loved. And then, you know, all of a sudden, and not a moment too soon, climate has become a much more core theme to our lives and to business and just our entire kind of world, really. And so I'm incredibly lucky to now find myself in the position where I have this incredible fusion of technical expertise and the experience in the business and private support world. So this current role is almost entirely business focused. So again, it comes with different challenges. But, yeah, I can bring a huge amount to it technically as well. And that's where the role really, you know, sort of took off for me.
We have a lot of candidates who come to us wanting that career change. And it is sometimes a word or a phrase I hear and my heart slightly sinks because it isn't easy. And I think often people have expectations which are unrealistic. And temping is always something we really try and encourage them to do to build up the experience. But also the network that you then generate is so valuable, and inevitably one thing leads to another. How did you find securing your temp roles, and was it as hard as you expected or not? Not really.
Yeah, I think when you make a change in career like that, it's a risk always, and you have to be prepared for that. I think, you know, that's where my own personal kind of creative strength comes in. I can't paint, I can't draw in that creative sense, but I can problem solve and I can, you know, create solutions. So when it came to kind of kicking off this new career, it was very much of a, I took the attitude that, you know, it was something I wanted, I was going to go out there and find it.
Yeah.
And by working for myself, I gave myself, I felt, the most opportunities possible to support myself without kind of, you know, taking, say, a much lower salary and doing one job to start filling up my CV. I took the risk to kind of, you know, go out there, meet people, do a good job, you know, get a good referral, build up a portfolio of people that I was working for, and work the hours that I wanted or needed, and, you know, obviously discuss how much I wanted to be paid for various different jobs. So for me, it gave me a lot more control over that transition, and that worked for me.
Did you use agencies to try and help you secure temping?
I didn't in the initial stage, and that was actually because I didn't know that they existed. So, you know, academia is an entirely different world with its own rules, the progression and the jobs and everything. It just operates in a totally different way. And when I, you know, made that step, it wasn't something that I even looked for. And when I then started looking for sort of my first permanent role, I just sort of started applying for roles that I saw advertised in various different places. And I didn't even get interviews for a lot of them. And that was very difficult and very disheartening because I felt I had a fairly good CV and I was, you know, I could do what they were asking, but it wasn't translating. And the role that I got was through, you know, word of mouth and networking. When it came to making that next step, discovering amazing people like yourselves, I was just kind of blown away because the magic of what you do is build the relationship with your clients and open the door. And so, you know, it gives people like me the opportunity to get, you know, to that first stage and be presented without having to get through that first bun fight of goodness knows how many CVs. You know, the person on the other end is fed up of looking through CVs. They just want to find the right fit. They're probably not going to go for something that doesn't look like it's exactly what they're looking for. You know, it's a lot more challenging. Mm. And so it was just a brilliant, brilliant kind of, it felt like a gift at the time, and I have worked with recruitment agencies ever since. Aww. Highly recommend to everyone out there listening.
I'm so pleased you had a positive experience, Claire. And tell us now about your chief of staff role, because from my understanding, every chief of staff role is so different. What takes up most of your time?
Yeah, you've really hit the nail on the head there with the chief of staff roles. I wonder if it's worth just kind of taking a moment to reflect on just how many titles there are for what we do. So I've been a PA, I've been an EA, I've been a senior this and a whatever.
An admin professional.
Yep. I've been a head of CEO's office. There are a lot of different ways.
Does that matter to you?
It doesn't.
It doesn't.
It doesn't
matter to some people. It really does matter.
Yeah.
We do a lot of advising clients on different job titles and what perhaps the level they're at is reflecting better. But now you're just plain and simple chief of staff, so that's easier.
You would think. But the chief of staff is just an absolutely incredible role. It really, really is. But my goodness, it's diverse. It's diverse within the role that you do. But it's, you know, if you go out looking for a chief of staff role, they are just... the breadth of the subject matter that they cover is just crazy. They can be very focused on HR and personnel and operations and kind of that side of the world, or they can be very business focused, very strategic, kind of being that really that right-hand person to a company CEO. So mine is a lot more towards the business side because it's evolved in the role that I am in now. So I started as EA. And very quickly progressed. I think, you know, it's obvious that I had a lot of technical skills that I could give and that I could, I pushed the boundaries, pushed to take on different things. I could see spaces I could fill. You know, part of that is working in a startup.
So there was the opportunity to do that.
Offers you an incredible opportunity. I have a very entrepreneurial, incredible CEO who is visionary. He moves at 1,000 miles an hour, and there is always a chance to kind of jump in and get your hands dirty in something new. So my, you know, if it wasn't anyone who's tried writing a CV for any EA role knows it's difficult to really capture what you do.
Yes, and get it all in there.
Get it all in there. I think the same is true for a chief of staff role. How do you really describe what you do? I'm not sure. But for me, I would say kind of what takes up my time. I'm going to throw some phrases in there that are probably a bit familiar, like project management. what does that mean to me? So I guess an example there, more applied example, would be, you know, we have a presence at obviously the key global climate conferences such as COP, where, you know, the world's leaders and policymakers come together to try and decide what we can do to mitigate against the big issues that come with climate change. So obviously it's something that we want to be at, be involved with, be seen. And so I would manage our entire programme. So that would be deciding on the content, the subject matter that we are going to, you know, really use as our core messaging. I suppose creating all of that with the marketing team and all of our subject matter experts. Planning our attendance in as much as everything from getting there and getting home and where you're staying to, you know, the meeting agenda throughout all of those days that you're there, meetings while you're there, panels while you're there, interviews, prepping for media. So it's a big package. Yeah, but it's just fabulous.
And as the business grows and develops, I imagine your role does with it. So every year it's different and changing and adding new dimensions.
Yeah. And, you know, that's, again, one of the perks of going into that startup world, is that you are exposed to opportunities that you might not get in a more established company that's really found its feet and is, you know, focusing on, you know, just kind of improving and starting to, you know, sort of get bigger, get better, that sort of thing, has got established products or whatever else. But when you're in that sort of kind of nucleus stage, you are just shouting, you know, you're doing everything you can to capture that space. You've got to prove that what you're talking about has a purpose, is important, that you know what you're doing, you're the person to trust. It's capturing that first market, really leading the category, and you've got to throw everything in the kitchen sink at it.
How exciting. And you work completely remotely.
I do.
So this is something else I wanted to talk about, because since recording season one, we have had the pandemic, and so many more people are doing hybrid working, remote working. What is your experience in that? Kind of pros and cons?
Pros and cons. There are pros and cons.
Good.
Definitely.
Good. Otherwise, our conversation would be limited.
I think, the experience for everyone going into remote working was, this is fantastic.
Well, it was something that was so wanted by people,
yes,
pre-pandemic. It was the one thing people asked for.
Yeah.
Particularly people with families, that was made a, such a big difference to them with childcare mm-hmm. commitments. Mm-hmm. And it was something that no one really offered. And then obviously we all did working from home.
Yeah.
And it is interesting seeing the swing actually now with, I would say, more companies are perhaps doing the back to work. They want people back in the office, not necessarily 5 days. And actually we find clients wanting 5 days office are missing out on a lot of the best talent, because most people will request at least 1 day working from home.
Mm-hmm.
But completely remote working is the other end of the spectrum, really. Mm-hmm. What's the advantage of that from your business?
It has allowed us to hire globally.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you manage then the different time zones and making sure that teams are still effective and still connected. But particularly, you know, in the case of the climate tech sector, it's brand new. There's a scarcity of talent at the moment. If you're limiting yourself to a geographical region, it's going to be tough, really tough.
What about office culture or company culture? How do you find that?
We have really put a huge, huge amount into supporting that side of the culture, which is so appreciated, I think, by everyone who works there. So we have all of the normal kind of communication channels, but talking about things outside of work is absolutely encouraged. Like, there's space for that to connect on a human level as well as a professional level. We have budgets put aside for, you know, being able to get your team together in person. We have away days where the entire company is brought together, sort of a once a year thing. That's quite an undertaking, but it's absolutely worth it.
Is that your job as well?
I am definitely heavily involved in that. And then there's things like I chair our bi-weekly, what we call all hands meetings. So, you know, everybody attends. And we run through, you know, company updates with everyone in the room. Mm-hmm. We have an open Q&A time where people can ask anything that they want to in front of, you know, the entire company. If they want, they can also do it anonymously. Mm-hmm. And we'll answer those questions as well. And then we put in a couple of sort of more relaxed parts to that meeting where we just have a bit of fun and laugh together and kind of, you know, show who we are.
Yeah.
Show our real selves and have that opportunity to still connect. And so I think we have done it really, really well. But nothing still really compares to being in a room with people.
And so much of human interaction is nonverbal.
And this is it. So when I took this role to start with, I was really hesitant about going into a support role, an EA to a CEO role, where I wasn't going to be with him.
Mm. Where is he based? Is he UK?
He is. He's in London.
Okay.
So
you could if you want.
I can be with him. Well, you know, he's happy at home. He's got his office set up. He is just living the remote dream and travels a fair bit.
Okay.
but, you know, so much of the role for me up until this particular job, without sounding creepy, is about observation. Mm-hmm. It's watching how people interact. It's understanding how the person I'm supporting likes to work in kind of the least intrusive way possible. I like to just kind of get a feel for the person and try and mold around them and work in a way that I know will translate for them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that's a big part of any support role, is almost adapting your working style to who you're supporting.
Yeah.
Because everybody will like to work in a slightly different way.
Yeah. And you have to be, you know, or it's a real benefit to be sensitive to that.
Yeah.
It makes you more efficient. It makes the partnership better and the trust is there. And so without actually being with my boss, I was sort of like, how am I going to get that connection
rapport.
And that rapport and that relationship? Because that's how I think I do my job best. So it's been different.
Did you meet as part of the interview process?
That was all remote.
It was all remote. So.
All remote, yeah. I mean, he is a very outgoing character. And so I got a really good... I could get a good feel for him even on a video call. And I knew straight away that it was someone that I could work with.
And it's worked.
And it's worked, yeah.
And do you have any junior staff in the business who maybe might find that more challenging in terms of learning or listening to conversations? Do you think perhaps for people at the start of their career, that's maybe one of the cons of the remote working?
Yes and no. I think there are people who are just loving the opportunity to just work remotely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people who are starting their careers now and doing a lot of remote working, I guess maybe even people who never had the experience of being
yes,
in the office
know any difference.
Don't really know any different, and also have a completely different lifestyle. Like, you know, mine is adapted to get to kind of fit around this kind of shiny new remote working kind of experience. But some of the people I work with are like, yeah, this is how we do it, and I make pasta in the evening. I'm like, what? I spent most of my life on a train.
Yes. You think of the hours we rack up
yeah,
on that train.
And they've got, you know, the coolest pasta making Instagram account I've ever seen in my life. They're so, you know, they've just got a really good thing going on. So I think they're smashing it, actually.
Okay. And then tell me about startup, because again, it's got lots of people really want it. Some candidates are kind of anti it. Can you tell me about the pros and cons in your experience of working for a startup?
Yeah, pros, absolutely opportunity and exposure.
Yeah.
If you are driven and ambitious, it will take you far. You know, I've gone from an EA to this chief of staff role in a couple of years.
Mm.
The company has gone through a hyperscale. It's grown very fast. And so that role, you know, was there. But if you, you know, if you want to make progress and you really want to learn, then a startup can give you that.
And I imagine being smaller, you're working much more closely with senior management. So the exposure you're getting to the people making these big decisions is much greater than perhaps in a larger company where you're lower down and therefore not always having that same level of exposure.
Yeah. I support the CEO and the COO.
Okay.
Now. have done for sort of 18 months. And then our leadership team obviously is expanding as the company grows and we go to market and that kind of thing. The rest of the leadership team don't, as of yet, have kind of direct, like a direct support. So I do a lot across the leadership team, but actually...
You're very popular.
Popular or the opposite, one or the other. But again, like, you know, the way that it's set up, the size of the company and the speed, it gives me, like, you know, unique kind of opportunities, like acting as that translation between the leadership team and the rest of the company. So I sit in conversations where we discuss, you know, the long-term roadmap or the vision, yeah, or the, you know, and the mission and, you know, what's 5 years down the line. And then also, what do we do, you know, with the colour theme on this particular widget in this part of the product? You know, that's the range of the discussions. And
All equally as important.
All equally as important, but that's exactly it. So I get the chance to, because I have that climate science background, yeah, and that technical expertise, and have learned business, I talk business now, I have the chance to translate that leadership kind of, those conversations and priorities to the team and the subject matter experts that I'm talking to. I can also take, you know, their ideas, their progress or their concerns or their questions and translate those, you know, back into a, you know, the product potentially would do better if we, you know, think about X, Y, and Z. And so being able to do that gives me touch points across the entire organisation.
And I suppose some of the cons that people are concerned about is the long-term option, the stability. Is it going to work? Is the money going to be there? Am I going to get paid?
Yes.
You've obviously been in a very successful startup. Not all are. It's always a case of risk versus reward. What are your thoughts on that?
So, I think I'm going to apologise if this sounds a little bit harsh in advance. You need to know what you're getting into if you want to work in a startup. There is risk. It may not be funded. The money might run out. Your job may end, and that is a startup. If you're not willing to take that risk, it's not the right job for you. But equally, you have a choice in that when you're interviewing. You have the opportunity to look at the company,
ask questions
and convince yourself that it's a viable, yeah, idea and, you know, things are in place to help it succeed. Mm-hmm. You need to be prepared to work hard.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where research and interview is so key.
Yes.
And if you aren't 100% sure, do another round, go and meet more teams, mm-hmm, speak to someone else. Hopefully that will give you many of the answers that you need to ensure that any concern is alleviated.
Yeah.
But fortune favours the brave.
I think so. Yeah, no, I think so. Like I said, if you want to progress and grow at, you know, speed,
yeah,
then that is
the
one
startup
place
world
where you're going to do that, because you have to.
And climate change is a more and more popular topic, and one perhaps we don't know a huge amount about still. Tell us about your experience, because a lot of candidates listening to this are often unsure which industries might appeal to them. And it'd be really interesting to hear about what your experience has been.
Climate change as a sector is new,
yeah,
you know, is brand new. And that is partly down to the introduction of legal mandatory disclosure on climate risk. So, you know, internationally, we're recognising that the impacts of climate change, you know, they affect us as humans. They're affecting nature, our planet, in every way. But it's also having a significant impact on business. So businesses, you know, it's their job to protect their sort of financial health, and also be transparent about the risks that are associated with the decisions and strategies that they're making. So climate risk disclosure will require businesses to understand and report on the risk that climate change poses to their organisation. Also, they're going to have to explain how they're going to manage that risk or capitalise on the opportunities, and, you know, what their strategies are and how that's baked into how they're going to run their business. So you can imagine, you know, right there, that's already opening up an entire new world of expertise that many thousands of businesses suddenly need to find. Yeah. As I said, you know, climate talent is scarce. There are many people like me in academia, but there's no clear path from academia into the business world yet. You should definitely kind of, you know,
capitalize on that.
I'll only take a 50% commission. You're going to struggle as a CEO or a CEO to find someone who knows enough about climate change to, you know, really competently complete that work. But also there then becomes the opportunity for a lot of new businesses like climate tech to create the tools and insights
and the products
that businesses need to succeed. And let's be clear, we want people to succeed. We all need to succeed in our efforts to do something about climate change. And while disclosure is going to be a challenge for a lot of people, it's a step in the right direction because it forces people to be more responsible about the decisions that they're making and also helps to secure, you know, our economic stability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, businesses need to thrive and prosper. We all want that. And so creating those solutions is now going to be a huge part of that, to that businesses can plug in and go, this is what we do. Tell us where the risk is and give us an idea about what we can do to mitigate for that.
So interesting. So it's only going to become a bigger area.
Yep, absolutely. You know, the fact that it is going to be mandatory, it has to happen. You know, it's in a way the stick.
Yes.
to force people to take action. And, you know, hopefully many good things will come out of it.
Claire, thank you so much. It's been so interesting. I've just sat here listening to you. There's been so much information and I hope it'll be really interesting to the listeners. Is there anything else that we might not have covered?
Well, actually, I was thinking, Olivia, given that this is the kickoff to, I'm sure, an amazing second
series,
maybe we should switch things up a bit and maybe I should ask you.
Well, it's dangerous to give me a microphone, Claire. Okay, fire away.
Okay, so I'm going to go for a nice gentle one. Maybe the people that follow me might come up with something more creative. But I'm going to say, what job did you see yourself doing when you grew up? How does it compare to where you are?
Do you know what? It's so funny you asked me that because I always knew I'd do a job with people because I've always been a chatterbox. I've always been a little bit nosy. Inquisitive's a nicer way to describe it. But I've always been really fascinated by what people have done and how they got there. And also, I think when you leave education, there are so many different jobs out there and you are almost a bit kind of confused about where to begin. Part of which is why I've done this podcast is because I think it's really interesting for people to know different industries and what that looks like and what it will feel like. So for me, I always was a chatterbox. Always was on my phone. And so I knew very quickly that I wanted to do something recruitment related. And it is funny that I've ended up here. My father, when I was at school, used to pay my phone bill, as I'm sure a lot of people did before I got a job. And every month he used to It was in the days when you used to get an itemised bill and he used to scream, Olivia! And I used to come running, or my mother would say hide, because every single month I'd rack up this outrageous bill because I was just nattering on the phone. And that is what I still do, building relationships, talking to people. And the more I know my clients and candidates, the better I provide that matchmaking service. So I do think that that is a strength that at kind of 15, 16 was probably hugely frustrating to my parents, but actually has served me in quite good stead. So, yeah, and I love it because I constantly meet people who do jobs that are so unique. And I'm constantly introduced, much like yourself, to people who do work in sectors I hadn't necessarily been exposed to before. So it's fascinating. I think some people think with recruitment, the sales side is a negative. But actually, we're very fortunate, or all partners, we don't really do the sales element. We're much more of a relationship building or consultancy. So I don't have to do that kind of business development element that perhaps some people think comes with recruitment. So huge recruitment ambassador, clearly, and something I thought I would always do. But not everyone would give you that answer. I think most people fall into it.
I think it's unusual, definitely, to kind of have that sort of clear pathway and thinking, yes, this is a direction that works for me. And
I also think recruitment's fantastic in that you're on commission, which is unlike being on a flat salary, which most people will be. And I like that. I like knowing I can work really, really hard, but I get rewarded. And the concept of being on a flat salary now is so alien to me.
Yeah.
So it definitely takes a type of person, but I love helping people, dealing with people. That's why probably for us working from home wouldn't be as successful perhaps as in other areas, because meeting people face to face just makes such a difference. But I think recruitment's a very special industry, and have done it for many years and still love it, which I hope comes through. Did you want to do climate change when you were a little girl?
I wanted to be a weather girl.
Kind of the same.
Which is kind of the same, yeah. Yeah, not a million miles away.
Exactly.
It's still very much about that. Now, I've always loved earth sciences and kind of the natural world, and so I knew I would have something to do with it, but no, I never would have guessed that I would end up where I am. But I am so grateful that I did, because it's just a fantastic role to be in. And
well, you talk about it so passionately, and thank you so much for joining us. It was actually your email where about the podcast that really pushed me to do this second series, so thank you for that. And thank you everyone for listening. Stay tuned for our next episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Oriel Partners PA podcast. I hope you found this informative and inspiring. If you are looking for a new PA role, or know of anyone else who might be, or are looking to hire, please do get in touch and we would love to help. The web address is orielpartners.co.uk and our office number is 0207 101 9229.